Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, April 6th, 2026. From the front page of the paper, Eggs on the Square. Little hunters net big egg haul. Kids share fun candy collecting plans during holiday event by D. Jack Alkery. Bloomington. Rainy weather and a slick, slightly muddy lawn couldn't stop professional Easter egg hunters like Amara Fogan from competing in the annual Eggs on the Square this weekend. Before the go that signaled the start of the 8- and 9-year-old hunt on Saturday, Amara could hardly contain herself. I was getting excited because I know eggs bring me so much energy, and I just love Easter egg hunting, Amara said in a post-competition interview. She focused on not stepping on the eggs and not slipping in the mud. Hunters competed in 4 different waves for some 15,000 candy-filled, colorful little packages, with Bloomington Mayor Dan Brady counting down each one. Young hunter Riley Roberts, competing in the 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old hunt, said the biggest challenge was trying to get the big orange egg. Within all the chaos, though, elder egg huntsman Mazik Lyons Murda, 11, was focused on ensuring everyone bagged a full basket of eggs. I was making sure that the little kids at least got some, even though I grabbed like 100, he said after the competition. That's the whole point of these sorts of events, said Rachel Roberts, Riley's mother. It's important to offer everybody a chance to have fun, no matter what your circumstances, Roberts said. Eggs on the Square is the official start of warm events in downtown Bloomington, said Hannah Horn, downtown development specialist with the city. We're looking forward to the streetscape project in the 600 block of North Main Street being fully completed, the light structure being done, she said. We're looking forward to the farmers market this year. We'll have some food trucks present, which has been a change from previous years. And we're just excited for everyone to see how amazing our downtown is. Roberts and Deidre Fogan, Amara's mother, met up with their group of friends for the festivities. These little kids appreciate, even if these eggs were empty, they would just enjoy the hunt, Fogan said, adding she is glad the city hosts the annual event. It doesn't cost everybody a bunch of money, and it's just better for the community, bringing people together, and everyone is kind. Over the years, Eggs on the Square has grown to include more businesses and community vendors, Horn said. Our community groups are really the highlight of the event, we would say. By having more of the community present, such as our face painters, the Girl Scouts are here, the Bloomington Library is here, Illinois Art Station, we've really made it a bigger, more holistic event for everyone to feel welcome, she said. And the work Horn and her team do to make downtown a welcoming place gives families like Roberts and Fagans the chance to come together more easily. It's my favorite part of the holidays, Fagan said. I don't have a lot of family around here, so doing things like this with my friends is the best we get for this sort of celebration type thing. It's always fun. The kids look forward to it, and it gets me out of the house. A free activity is always nice. And, of course, there were a number of photos that accompanied this, this story. Several of local children hunting for the eggs during the Eggs on the Square event, which was held Saturday in downtown Bloomington. A picture of a volunteer helping to spread out the Easter eggs, and others. From page 2, today's Flick Fact. Today's question. Illinois State's Big Red Marching Machine is one of the nation's largest collegiate marching bands. It was also the first college marching band in America to allow what? Today's answer, women. During World War II, with so many men in the military, director Wayne Sherrard created all-women marching band. For years, the women's and men's bands marched side by side before officially becoming one co-ed band in 1962. How time flies. 100 years ago, April 6, 1926. The suggestion was made that the completion of the South Main Street Viaduct and the influx of traffic off the Meridian Highway might be followed by a change in the name of Main Street to Meridian, in harmony with that of the concrete highway which now extends from Rockford on the north to Cairo on the south, a distance of 350 miles. 75 years ago, April 6, 1951, the old wood platform in front of Miller Park Bandstand was torn off. The bandstand will be repainted, and a larger concrete platform stage will be built April 21st as a clean-up, paint-up, fix-up week project. 50 years ago, April 6, 1976. For retired citizens, the most important issue is income, according to Ralph Hap Ahrens, who spent 24 years as McLean County Superintendent of Schools. He retired in 1967. In 1970, he started working for retired citizens, and he received Bloomington Normal Kiwanis Club Senior Citizen of the Month Award. 25 years ago, April 6, 2001. Services to heart patients and others who are critically ill will be delivered in a new way at OSF, St. Joseph Medical Center, after completion of a $24.2 million critical care building, hospital administrators and doctors announced. If approved by the state, the two-story, 84,211-square-foot building will be added to the south side of the Bloomington Hospital. The building would be the focal point for all OSF St. Joseph cardiology services and an attempt to deliver care that is more patient and family-focused, said Dr. Paul Peterson, hospital medical director. Turning to local and state news, Springfield Police Chief defends officer who punched 19-year-old. By Stephen Speary, Springfield State Journal Register. Springfield Police Chief Joe Bell defended an officer who struck a 19-year-old girl in the head while arresting her last week, as several city council members took him to task for the optics of the situation. A parade of speakers at the Committee of the Whole meeting preached the use of de-escalation tactics, questioned why the department wasn't following calls to action laid out by the Massey Commission, formed after the fatal shooting of Sonia Massey, an unarmed black woman, and questioned why the department wasn't putting the incident to an independent review authority. Representatives from the Purple, People United to Reform Power, Liberty, and Equity Coalition, Black Lives Matter Springfield, and the Good Trouble Coalition were all in attendance. Officer Jacob Walter, Bell said, hasn't been disciplined and remains on the force. Walter was accused of striking Promise Marie Davis in the head in the act of arresting her near the intersection of 15th Street and Cornell Avenue on a traffic stop March 27th. Davis, who was out on pretrial release, was arrested for aggravated battery to a police officer, retail theft over $300, forgery, insurance fraud, obstructing justice, resisting arrest, and obstructing identification. We abide by a state law and policy, and that's what we did, Bell told the State Journal Register during a break at the meeting. Walter followed policy. He followed procedure. Not only that, he followed state law. In a narrative written by Walter and obtained by the State Journal Register, he admitted that he delivered one closed fist strike to Davis's head as a way to distract her and gain compliance, as Promise continued to push me and my hands away from her. Addressing the alderpersons, Bell insisted that Davis was a defensive, resistant person and that Walter could have used a taser, OC, or pepper spray, or a baton. Walter, Bell said, started two levels below a taser, with soft, empty hand control, then went up one level to hand strikes. He went back to soft, empty hand control once Davis was on her stomach and had her hands behind her back, Bell said. Ward 3 alderman Roy Williams Jr. was incredulous that such strikes were established procedure. You shouldn't be training them that way, Williams insisted. We need to look at this policy. I think you and Mayor Misty Buescher should be held accountable. What makes me mad is from the top down, you guys automatically bless it like it's okay. It's not right. It's horrible. Williams, Ward 2 Alderperson Sean Gregory, and Ward 5 Alderperson Lakeisha Purchase formed the Springfield Aldermanic Black Caucus Foundation. Gregory and Purchase viewed unredacted body camera footage from Walter and Officer Zane Steele, who was called in to back up Walter before the meeting. The Springfield Police Department released redacted versions to the public on March 30th. Purchase questioned why there wasn't a female officer on the scene earlier. A female officer was called to the Sangamon County Jail later. Purchase also had concerns about Walter's body camera being turned off at a crucial time during the struggle with Davis. Bell insisted Davis's elbow pressed up against it, deactivating it. A passersby cell phone camera picked up what we should have picked up. Imagine if somebody didn't have that camera there, Purchase said. The optics just suck for you guys right now. The cell phone video started circulating around social media over the weekend. Ball game honors Dimitri Riggs. A player takes a fadeaway shot while taking a foul Saturday during the first DR33M Big All-Star Game at the Boys and Girls Club in Bloomington, honoring the late Dimitri Riggs, who coached and mentored youth through the game of basketball. The day featured a game for youth as well as adults, a three-point contest, and a dunk contest. It also served as a fundraiser for Riggs' family. Outdoor recreation. Trout season reels dedicated anglers to area lakes and ponds. By Danette Beckett. Decatur. Easter may be an exciting holiday for families, but for a specific dedicated group, the first weekend in April is much more highly anticipated. Saturday at 5 a.m. marked the start of spring trout season. Several fishermen spent an early rainy morning on the banks of designated Central Illinois ponds. Pena resident Brent McKinney brought his 9-year-old daughter Lily to Sullivan's Wyman Lake. We got here a little before 7 a.m., he said. 5 a.m. is when you can start, but that's a little bit early. Like many who enjoy fishing, the father-daughter team bypassed closer waters for the spot that worked best for them. We've always had good luck here, McKinney said. We've never had great luck at Shelbyville. After 2 hours of waiting in the rain for their allotted 5 fish to be caught, Lily had already returned to the family vehicle to warm up. It's cold, she said, but it's kind of fun. Although her dad warned her about the wet weather, Lily wanted to join him on the banks of the pond. We're going to make a day of it, her dad said Saturday. We're going to Rosati's and then head home and watch Illinois' basketball game. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources stocked nearly 60 ponds, lakes, and streams throughout the state with trout. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources stocks more than 80,000 rainbow trout each year in bodies of water where trout fishing is permitted during the spring season, according to their website. An additional 80,000 trout will be stocked for the fall trout season, which begins in October. The unique opportunity is what brings McKinney and others out to the local ponds. We don't get the opportunity here in Illinois to fish for trout very often. It's cool to catch something kind of different, McKinney said. And it's kind of like the official start to the fishing season. Mitchell Hemrick traveled to Shelbyville's Forest Park Lagoon to catch his first trout of the season. It's got several species in it, but the trout is the main attraction for me, he said. I did pretty good last year. After 20 minutes, Hemrick had quickly caught 2 2-pound trouts. It's a great one, he said about the biggest fish, hoping to serve the catch for Easter dinner. Hemrick noted the worse the weather, the better the experience. It's less people, he said, and Mother Nature and the fish seem to know the worse it is, the better the fishing is. Fishing is a family bonding event for many. Kevin Schmitz and his grandson Keaton Schmitz, 14, stopped at the Forest Park Lagoon. It's just fun, Keaton said, after successfully catching his first trout. It was a surprise. I was just sitting there. After the start of the season, the fishermen are allowed to keep their catch. We're taking them home, Keaton said, and we'll eat it. I'll fillet it out for him, his grandfather said. No matter the weather, trout fishing is one of the first opportunities to experience the spring weather, Schmidt said. It gets us outside and into the outdoors, he said. Trout season ends when the fish are gone. You can fish for whatever you want out of here, but that's why everybody is here today, for the trout, Schmidt said. Turning to the sports page, missed shots cost Illini, but they appreciate the ride, by Colleen Kane. Indianapolis. Brad Underwood had trouble getting the words out, the emotion of the moment finally overcoming him. The Illinois coach stood in a tunnel at Lucas Oil Stadium, underneath the giant blow-up photos of his players. Keaton Wagler shooting with the look of easy focus. David Merkovich, his mouth in a straight line, looking to pass with urgency. Andrej Stojakovic, bellowing with joy, and more. Underwood and these players had led the Illini back to the Final Four for the first time in 21 years. They captured the attention first of the Illinois fan base, then of the country during this NCAA tournament, with their skill, chemistry, personalities, and stories. They drew tens of thousands of Illini fans to Indianapolis, people dressed in orange streaming through the streets hours before the game, and then showing up early to the stadium, spreading across half of the lower bowl of seating and all across the upper deck. And now, 4 hours later, it was all over. A dream season, one of the best in Illinois history, cut a game short after Connecticut's 71-62 victory to advance to the national championship game against Michigan. That end came via a dizzying array of missed shots, layups and three-pointers bouncing around the rim and rolling out, for a team known for its efficient offense, was maddening. That the Illini couldn't complete their comeback attempt, despite cutting it to 4 in the final minutes, was dismaying. But what made Underwood crack, tears filling his eyes, was that the loss cut the memory short. To see the orange and blue out, I can't thank them enough, he said. I hope this team created memories that last a lifetime, for a lot of people, for no matter what age. It certainly did for me. For the second time this season, Connecticut got the better of the Illini, but this time there was no moving on from the loss for the Illini, who finished 28-9. The Huskies, currently 34-5, six-time national champions, rattled them on both ends of the court for three-quarters of the game and led for all but a short stretch in the first half on the way to the title game. They will play for their third title in 4 years after winning in 2023 and 2024. The loss ended a memorable run for a fun group of Illini players. The Illini became media darlings on their NCAA tournament run with their interesting mix of U.S. and European players, big personalities, and intense competitors. The CBS Sports Reporter called them the most fun team in the Final Four. The Athletic dubbed Mirkovic the most interesting man in the Final Four, recounting a handful of hilarious stories about the Montenegrin. Underwood, at 62 years old and in his 39th year of coaching, was making his first Final Four appearance, leading an Illini team to the big stage for the first time since the 2005 run to the national championship game. The stars of that team, Deron Williams and Dee Brown, sat together at Saturday's game, drawing huge cheers when they were shown on the video board. But Illinois couldn't make it back to the final game. The Illini will have to wait another year to try for their first national championship, although it will have to be with some new pieces. With seniors Kylan Boswell and Ben Hermitius graduating, and Wagler likely off to the NBA. "Honestly, it's not even stuff with basketball," Boswell said, of what he'll remember from his final season. "It's nice to make it to the Final Four. That's what you work for. But it's this group of people. These are my best friends." The Illini started cold from deep, missing their first 6 3-point attempts, before Wagler ended the drought with 10:30 to play in the first half, sending a roar through the Illini crowd. Illinois came up with defensive stops, but couldn't build a lead in the second half, or in the first half, missing 7 of their last 8 shots. When the teams met earlier this season on Black Friday, UConn easily handled Illinois in a 74-61 victory. "It doesn't feel very good at the moment," Underwood said. "I think we're a national championship caliber team who didn't have a very good day. That's not to discredit UConn. I have so much respect for Dan Hurley and the job he has done, but it doesn't feel very good right now." There was big buildup to this game for the Illini, who had beaten Penn, VCU, Houston, and Iowa to make it to the Final Four. During an open practice at Lucas Oil Stadium, thousands of Illini fans showed up in orange to watch, while large groups of kids on field trips sat in the end zone cheering. Underwood said afterward that was why he came to Illinois, to go to a place where basketball was important to fans. "If that doesn't touch you, then you're not human," Underwood said. The follow-up Saturday just fell short of also being special. "We felt the love," Boswell said. "We were trying to do this for them. We know how much it means to them, the success this team has had throughout the season. We're more than thankful we have a fan base like that going into the future. It just makes it so much more fun." And tonight, Monday, the men's college basketball NCAA tournament championship between Connecticut and Michigan will begin with pregame activities at 7:30 p.m. The game will be shown on TBS, TNT, and on True TV. Turning to national and world news, The Digest. Screenwriters, studios reach 4-year agreement. Los Angeles. The Screenwriters Union and Hollywood Studios reached a surprise 4-year tentative agreement after roughly 3 weeks of negotiation. The Writers Guild of America West said on social media that its negotiating committee unanimously approved a tentative agreement with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which represents studios. The Alliance confirmed the deal in a separate statement on its website Saturday. "We look forward to building on this progress as we continue working toward agreements that support long-term industry stability," read the Alliance statement. The contract agreement, a year longer than a typical 3-year deal, must be approved by the Guild's board and members before it is ratified. 4 killed after chase with Alabama State Trooper. Troy, Alabama. 4 people died when a car that was being pursued by an Alabama State Trooper went off the road and hit a tree, authorities said Sunday. The driver was trying to elude the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency's highway patrol on a rural road in southeast Alabama's Pike County when the crash occurred late Friday night. ALEA spokeswoman Amanda Wadson said in an email, "No other vehicles were involved." Wadson said the crash was under investigation and no additional information was available. Lafayette Park. The U.S. Secret Service said Sunday it was investigating reports of overnight gunfire near Lafayette Park, which is across the street from the White House. No injuries were reported and no suspect was found after a search of the park and the surrounding area after midnight. Pennsylvania. Two members of the Walnut Town Fire Company, who were traveling in a utility vehicle along a Pennsylvania road during a search for a missing woman, were killed Saturday night in a head-on collision with a car, officials said. Germany. Three people, including a 10-month-old girl, were killed Sunday when high winds toppled a tree in northern Germany during an Easter egg hunt, people said. Around 50 people from a nearby residential facility were attending the event, police said in a statement. Sweden. Swedish authorities Sunday released a tanker sanctioned by the EU that was boarded and detained on suspicion of causing an oil spill in the Baltic Sea. The Swedish Coast Guard said they did not find sufficient evidence that the Flora I tanker was at fault for the 8-mile spill, which was discovered on Thursday. Pope Leo prays for world peace. By Colleen Barry, Associated Press, Vatican City. Pope Leo XIV celebrated his first Easter Mass as pontiff with a call Sunday to lay down arms and seek peace to global conflicts through dialogue. But he departed from a tradition of listing the world's woes by name in the blessing. Leo, the first U.S.-born pope, emphasized Easter's message of hope as a celebration of Jesus' resurrection after being crucified. Let us allow our hearts to be transformed by his immense love for us. Let those who have weapons lay them down. Let those who have the power to unleash wars choose peace. Not a peace imposed by force, but through dialogue. Not with a desire to dominate others, but to encounter them, the Pope implored. With the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran in its second month and Russia's ongoing campaign in Ukraine, Leo acknowledged a sense of indifference to the deaths of thousands of people, to the repercussions of hatred and division that conflicts, to the economic and social consequences they produce. Without mentioning the wars by name, Leo quoted his predecessor, Pope Francis, who during his last public appearance from last Easter reminded the faithful of the great thirst for death, for killing, we are witnessing each day. Francis, weakened by a long illness, died the next day on Easter Monday. Before retreating into the basilica, Leo stepped forward out of the loggia's shadow and waved to the cheering crowd below. He later greeted people in the piazza from the Pope Mobile that took him all the way down Via della Consigliere toward the Tiber River and back. During the marathon that is Holy Week, Leo also reclaimed the tradition of washing priests' feet on Holy Thursday, a gesture chosen after Francis had chosen the more inclusive path, traveling to prisons and homes for the disabled to wash the feet of women, non-Christians, and prisoners. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the Pantograph for Monday, April 6th, 2026. Please stay tuned.